Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Hey, Jim, can you hand me that rope over there?
Sure, here you go. Did I give you enough rope? All right, it's day two of Clash Week.
It is. Happy Tuesday, Jim.
It's only day two, and yeah. I don't want it to end. This is the best week ever on Rock really in the good. Suburbs. Okay, so you have served me with Red Stripe number two.
That's right.
So we all know where this is headed. By the time we get to Combat Rock.
You're going to be drinking PBR.
Yeah.
You ever had Red Stripe before, Jim?
I have. It's been a long time. Mm-hmm. I like the bottles. I like the shape of the bottles, little nubby bottles.
Jamaican beer.
It seems like they used to be even shorter than this. Maybe I'm just imagining things.
Maybe.
I don't know. But
do you have any Red Stripe stories? Kind of
cool. It's not a great story, but I will tell you that when I was married many, many years ago, when I got married to my first wife, which is still my wife. All right, so it's true. This was... In 1994, we got married. We were just crazy young kids.
Yeah, and you and Juliana.
Now stop it. We did what crazy young kids back in the 90s do for a honeymoon, which is go on a Caribbean cruise.
There you go.
It seemed like the thing to do.
Yeah.
And one of the ports of call was in Jamaica. Ocho Rios, that's what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they would let you off and you go and you
wander around a bit.
And you tour the falls and stuff like that. Sure. And you do all this stuff. And it was beautiful. It was lovely. And then we're in the cab on the way back, because you have to get back by a certain time or you're going to get left behind. And we're on the cab on the way back and we were almost back to the ship. And I said something like, you know, oh, damn, we probably should have got some Red Stripe to bring back on the ship, you know, because the prices of the alcohol on the ship is like really inflated because you're stuck there.
Outrageous.
Right? Oh, we should have got some Red Stripe. And the cab driver says, you want some Red Stripe? I'll get you some Red Stripe. And literally, he like goes to like maybe another 100 feet and like holds his hand out and like waves a guy down. He comes over to the cab and he just like has like beer and we just buy it from him.
Wow, that's beautiful.
And then we get on the ship. So, yep.
Guy on the street. That's beautiful.
And he knew exactly. Yes.
I love that.
Yeah, it was great. It was really fun.
Well, apparently that was a big beer for the Clash.
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
Because?
Well, you know, it was Jamaican and I think it was cheap. Yeah, I don't know the whole history, but apparently it also didn't dilute your marijuana too much. So if you smoked a few good joints, you know, the Red Stripe will just kind of cool you out a little bit. It won't, you know, you won't feel too drunk.
I've always found that to be the case.
Yeah, exactly. It's a good combination.
Okay.
And... we're kind of at an interesting point in this story, right? So we set a lot of context on Monday. Yeah. You know, we gave some background, but where we are right now in the proper history of the Clash is the first record they released officially in the United States.
That's right. So let me just set this up and say you're listening to Rock in the Suburbs.
Oh, that's right. You are.
And I'm Jim Linehan.
And I'm Patrick Foster. He's jumping ahead.
And this is Clash Week, and we're going through five albums this week. And so we're up to... album number two in the proper discography. It's called Give Them Enough Rope, but it was actually the first album released in the U.S.,
right?
So explain that, Patrick.
So first album released in the U.S. because, as we mentioned yesterday, the first Clash album was not released in the U.S.
It initially.
Initially available as an import record. Mm-hmm. Sold an all-time record for imports, but the second record... was the one that was really designed to break the Clash in America. They had had good success in Britain, right? They'd been popular. They were signed to a major label. But the U.S. label was a little hesitant, right? They wanted it to sound more radio-friendly, right?
Right.
More massive American-friendly, right? Let it play in the Midwest, man. You know, let's appeal to everybody. So what did they do? Logically, I'm not blaming them. They were a corporation. They thought strategically. They brought in a guy called Sandy Pearlman, who was at the time well known for being a rock critic who supposedly was the first guy to use the term heavy metal. Maybe, maybe not, depending on how you interpret it. But he did use it early on as a rock critic.
Right.
He produced Blue Oyster Cult.
Blue Oyster Cult.
And he also produced The Dictators, who were a CBS band, you know, that were kind of a New York punk band.
So The Dictators, not so much, but I can attest from growing up in the 70s in Ohio, Blue Oyster Cult was played on the radio.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt.
Yeah.
And I love Blue Oyster Cult. Yeah. Jim, you've come over to my house and I've been playing Blue Oyster Cult records. So, yes. You know, definitely a different match that was trying to happen. So CBS was trying to make the Clash bigger and more radio friendly and kind of huskier and more American. And Mick and Joe kind of went along with it for the most part. And they produced Give Him Enough Rope.
Right. So 1978, this comes out.
Uh-huh.
I don't think it sold particularly well.
Not in the U.S. In the U.K., right. It went to number two.
Right. But it's a pretty damn great album.
Especially really in retrospect, it's a lot of fun to listen to.
Yes. Yeah. I think there's a lot of people, because it came in between, in the official discography, in between the debut album mm-hmm. and London Calling, I think mm-hmm. there's a lot of people who overlook it today.
That's right. And I will say that it's also important because it's the first album with the classic lineup of the Clash, right? Topper Hedden is now in the band, right? Between the first album and the second album, they found their drummer.
So speaking of which,
yes.
Let's hear a little Topper. So there's Topper Hedden's drums.
Yeah.
I mean, the rapid fire fits perfectly. Mm-hmm. Tommy Gunn. Again, you know, it has all those kind of like classic Clash elements of the song.
Yeah.
You know, it could have been on the debut record.
Yep.
It's on the second one. It sounds like it totally belongs. You got Joe Strummer kind of, you know, spitting the words out.
Yep.
What's he saying exactly? But I also like the way, and this is where you really get a good sense that there's something more going on with the Clash than other punk bands.
Yeah.
The way there's kind of some minimalism there too, right? The band sort of drops out. You hear this weird kind of screeching guitar kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the way they arranged the songs was more sophisticated already. And these were pretty young guys at the time, right?
Mm-hmm. And I think Mick Jones deserves most of the credit for that, right? He was the music freak, right? He was the mad arranger. He was the obsessive. He was the one who was looking over Sandy Pearlman's shoulder trying to learn how to use the mixing desk and wanted to know every detail of how to do it himself and just influence all the decisions that went into to the nuances of making a record, right? And that's pretty fascinating, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I will say there's a school of thought, Jim, that thinks that if some of the singles that came between the first album and Give Him Enough Rope were included or saved, right, for a recording session for Give Him Enough Rope, and maybe you paired out some of the ones on Give Him Enough Rope that felt a little bloated or felt a little bit like filler, then you'd have this totally different album that bridged London Calling and the first record, right?
Okay.
But they didn't do that. You know, they put the records out when they made them. You know, they're very much in the creative process, and Mick and Joe really went with Sandy Pearlman's vision on this record. And oftentimes it didn't work. And I want to give you an example of where it didn't work.
Okay.
Stop it.
So that's drug stabbing time, in case you didn't hear. I don't know how many guitar overdubs are on that song, but they're not enough to fix it from being kind of a Clash piece of filler, like kind of a ready-made song. And I think that it's, you know, an example for me of the songs that just don't work on the record.
Interesting.
Right? Yeah.
Okay.
It just feels to me like it's heavily overdubbed. It's kind of screechy sounding. You know, the bass is so buried. And yeah. I think that's one of the biggest problems for me about this record. Although, in retrospect, I think it's really good, right? I really do. And I enjoy listening to it. I've loved catching back up with it over the past, you know, week as we prepared for this. But there's no black feel, there's no soul, there's no reggae on this record. It's very sort of sterilized and, you know, kind of made for American ears, right?
Well,
and that's what I, you know, I think ultimately makes me uncomfortable with it.
I think you're right about that. Although, here's my question. Is it the production you don't like or the song?
You know, I think it's probably a combination of both. And as I said, you know, and maybe I'm one of these on that school of thought, but some of the, you know, reggae covers that they did,
yeah,
you know, that weren't put on there, or even a song like
you'd
said,
rather have that on here.
Yeah. And even like you said, Jail Guitar Doors, right? What a song that is, right? And that was just relegated to a B-side, but how well would that have fit in on this record, right? That's a way better song than Drug Stabbing Time, for example.
It would have, although it's funny you say that, because so supposedly, you know, as you mentioned, Sandy Pearlman was trying to make something that would sell across the Atlantic.
Mm-hmm.
And he had success with that.
Yes.
With other British bands. And so, yes, the mix, they kind of, it's they emphasized the treble, they de-emphasized the bass, mm-hmm. right? And I also understand that he didn't particularly like Joe Strummer's voice. So
no.
He tried to bury that somewhat. Mm-hmm. In the mix too, which is really unfortunate because I think he has one of the great rock and roll voices
yeah.
of all time.
Yeah.
Just, you know, in terms of like, it's rough, but rough in a good way. And it speaks to, I think, sort of like why he loved like old music, like rockabilly and stuff like
yeah.
that, because it sounds kind of, you know, pub rock, kind of roadhouse,
yeah.
you know, it, mm-hmm. it feels real. But the thing I just noticed as you were playing Drug Stabbing Time is the ear for melody in that,
yeah.
right? I mean,
oh,
there's
yeah.
a melody that comes right through.
Yeah, even if it is a throwaway, there is some melody in there, right?
And
yeah.
one of the things about The Clash that I really appreciate is they, as much as they tended to write about very, very heavy, serious topics a lot of the time,
mm-hmm.
ultimately, they also understood the idea of entertaining people.
Yeah.
They wanted you to have a good time
yeah.
when you saw them live. They wanted you to dance for
mm-hmm.
to a large extent. And you could dance to that song.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Why don't we take a little break?
Okay.
And when we come back, I want to talk about an interesting detail about this record, and then we'll play another song.
All right, let's do that. So, Patrick,
mm-hmm.
I am looking at iTunes, and they have this thing called Top Podcasts.
Okay.
Okay. And on that, there's like all these different music podcasts that
all
people
right.
can listen to. And I guess they do listen to them because it's called Top Podcasts.
Mm.
But the one I don't see enough of on here
mm-hmm.
is Rockin' the Suburbs.
That's our podcast.
Yeah. And I think there's a way that we could make that happen.
How can we do it? I hope it involves Grassroots because I like grassroots movements.
Grassroots. The Grassroots was a good band,
yeah.
by the way. Temptation
right.
Eyes. But anyway, getting back to this topic, what we need to happen here is we need more of our listeners. Many of them have already done this and we appreciate it, but we need more listeners to go and rate and review
That's
Rockin'
right.
the Suburbs on iTunes. Because what that does is it helps us get into this top podcast chart,
which is where we want to be.
Casey Kasem will talk about us and then more people will listen. The more people who listen, the longer our wives will allow us to continue to do the show.
This is a very important metric, folks.
Yes.
We need to move the needle on this.
Yes.
We need more time to do Rockin' the Suburbs. So it's very simple. You just go, you dial up 5 stars on the review machine, and that's about all. Maybe you leave a nice comment about
yeah.
the smooth, velvety voices we have, and you're done.
Yes. Please do that. It really is important. Otherwise, my wife's just like, are you down there talking to Patrick again?
Yeah, I get the
you
same
know,
thing.
We need
Jim's
to,
coming over again.
Yeah. We need certain people to understand that people are really listening to the show and really like it. So please do that. Okay, we're back. And
yeah.
Patrick, What was the interesting detail? Well, I've been waiting for like the last 2 minutes for you to tell me what this is.
Listen to that horrible self-aggrandizing promo that the Clash would have hated. But
that's right.
The interesting thing for me was, Jim, whereas the first album was made as, let's put the band in the studio and record them. And they did it, you know, in a short period of time.
Of course.
The second record was a lot of waiting around, doing overdub after overdub. Sandy Pearlman asking, you know, Paul Simon in to play better on the beat, right? And trying to lock the rhythm section in and all this stuff that was super boring for the whole band. So they did all that. They had all the basic tracks done. And then Joe Strummer and Mick Jones flew to America for the very first time to work with Pearlman to kind of strip away a lot of the work and then do new overdubs and do new vocals. And during this time, you know, Mick and Joe kind of bonded and, you know, they started creating this different kind of partnership that really, I think, fueled, you know, the amazing songs that came after this. And you wanted to play one or talk about one. Yeah.
So the song I wanted to play, sticking with the drug theme, is a song that I think sort of foreshadows where the band is going with, you know, the next album, London Calling. Okay, Julie's been working for the drug squad.
Yeah, what a fabulous song. What a gem.
I love it. And it's about like some big drug bust that happened in Wales called Operation Julie. You only would know that in America if you went and looked it up.
Yeah.
Like you would the reference I think would be lost. I'm not sure in 1978 that anybody really knew much about that. Maybe it was big news. I don't know.
Yeah.
But first of all, I got to say it does one thing that I love, which is it sounds like a really happy, bouncy song, and it's about a serious topic, you know. But also, with that piano and with the swing, you know, the swing you hear a lot, or at least a few times in London Calling, there's kind of some jazz and swing influences there. This shows off Topper Heaton's drumming ability.
Without a doubt.
You know, the guy was really versatile. He had some jazz background. He could do things like that. But also, it's almost like a show tune.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Uh-huh.
You know?
And it's definitely got a little bit of New Orleans swing in it to it, right? Like you said, probably the grooviest song on this record by far. And even got a little bit of Beatles like kind of floating around in there.
Well, they reference Lucy in the Sky at the beginning, but yes, it does. It sounds like something the Beatles would have done.
Yeah.
It could have been so awful. You know? Yeah. It could have just been so hokey and terrible, but it still sounds like a Clash song in the best way. You know what I mean? All the best elements of the Clash still come through.
Yeah, that's right. And definitely foreshadows amazing songs on the next record, right? Of which we'll talk about soon.
And then, you know, just the other thing I'll say about Give Them Enough Rope. A couple other songs I think really stand out. The song Stay Free, I think, is one of the first examples of Mick Jones really kind of stepping up writing just, you know, a really nice pop song, again, about a serious topic, but really poppy and sort of light in its sound. And then the other one that has Mick Jones' influence, yesterday we mentioned how much he loved Mott the Hoople.
Yes.
On this record, he actually has a song called All the Young Punks.
Yeah, right? That's right. So very anthemic kind of a thing. And along the same lines, I think English Civil War is an interesting song, right? Because it kind of follows the, what is it, Johnny's been marching home,
yeah,
template, right? And it's very much kind of an English chant, right? You can almost right. hear it like on a football terrace.
That's where
perhaps.
The pub rock stuff
yeah,
comes in, right?
Exactly right. But yeah, they stay true to their roots, you know, to that point.
But you also get a sense that the band is not just, you know, again, they're not just railing at things. They actually like know history.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, they mm-hmm. understand a lot of the, you know, sort of geopolitical conflicts and complexities and the things that they're commenting on. And you know, a lot of it is not just about working class England and growing up in these neighborhoods in South London or what it is, but they're commenting on things that the Western governments are doing in other parts of the world. Yeah. And you see a lot, and there's a lot in many of their songs about, you know, Central America, mm-hmm. conflicts there and sort of, you know, getting involved in overthrowing governments and nation building and all this kind of yeah. stuff. Right. And we're going to mm-hmm. get more into that later, but you know, I just think there is a sense always with the Clash that they know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
That they're not just doing it for effect.
Yeah. And Joe Strummer was an ultimate thinker. You know, you read stories about the recordings and all the times where he would like take the flight cases and the drum cases and build himself a little bunker where he'd go in there and just read and, you know, kind of think and write his lyrics. But to me, Jim, I think Give Him Enough Rope is the ultimate transitional Clash record.
Yes.
Just because of some of the things I was talking about, some of the singles that could have come out, some didn't, and where they went immediately after that. So it was obviously a record where they were in full creative bloom. And they also took the opportunity to explore America and spend some of the label's money. And, you know, so they did all that. I will also say that this record contains one truly great Clash song.
Okay.
And I think that's what we're going to play out with.
We will. So please listen. I think you want to this week, at the very least, listen
every day.
Every day, because we're going to talk about each of the five proper Clash albums.
Yes.
And you know, I think tomorrow is kind of a big deal.
Yeah, it's Wednesday.
Yeah. And you could do that by accessing the show on any of your podcast platforms, too numerous and too transitional for me to mention right now by name. You can also find the show at suburbspod.com,
yep.
The show and or Musings. You can also find us on social media.
Mm-hmm.
It's at suburbspod on Facebook or Twitter. You could email us, rock@suburbspod.com, or you can call our suburban party line where you can talk about the Clash or anything else. That number is 612-440-1984. And we're going to leave you now.
Yeah.
First with our names. I'm Jim Lenihan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
And what is the song?
We're going to leave with what to me, Jim, is the classic best track on this record by far. It's also the first song in the album. It's one of the great, maybe overlooked, but maybe forgotten because of its transitional nature, Clash songs. But this is Safe European Home.
All right. Sounds good. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Give Him Enough Rope give him enough rope, 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 give him enough rope,
give him enough rope,
give him enough rope.